get the answers you need now. Contact the show by calling 416-872-1010 or text 71010. You're listening to The Animal House with Dr. Clayton Greenway on News Talk 1010 Toronto.
Take your questions about your pets. I've been practicing veterinary medicine for 20 years in Toronto. I've completed advanced training in orthopedic surgery, emergency care procedures, and internal medicine in dogs and cats. So this hour is a great opportunity to get your pet vet questions answered. The phone lines are open, so give us a call. 416-872-1010 or text us at 71010. If you're calling long distance, 1-877-518-5151. But more importantly, I'm here to help you. I'll give you honest answers so you can make the best medical decisions for your pet. I love helping people who love their pets, so give me a call. We get lots of calls, but if you call in early, if you call in now, I can guarantee I'll get to your question. The phone lines are open. 416-872-1010 or text us at 71010. And as always, I can promise my listeners one thing. If you care enough to call in, then I will care about your pet and give you the very best medicine I can deliver.
Now, what seems to be the problem? You can tell me. I'm a vet tuner.
All right. That's how we like to start the show. Okay. We all know it's getting hotter out there. And this week, we're going to see temperatures in the high 20s. That means that some of you doggies out there are going to be at risk for heat stress. And I have to tell you, this is one of the worst things for us to see a dog go through, is when they get heat stress. I don't know if many of my listeners know about this, but I wanted to talk about it today and how we avoid it. You know, I think one of the worst cases I ever saw was a dog that had heat stress. It was absolutely suffering for hours, and it was awful. I worked on it for hours and hours, and the problem with heat stress is once you go past a threshold, sometimes you can't bring them back, even with the treatment. Must have worked on that dog. It was an American Eskimo, so it was a very heavy-coated dog, was out in the sun too long, and the owners tried to help at first. They noticed that it was laboring. And this is what we see with dogs with heat stress. They start to pant, and they can't settle down. They lay down, but their panting is quite significant, severe. They're not responding as well. You know, if they go further into it, they basically collapse. But they knew something was wrong. So unfortunately, what the owners did was the absolute worst thing they could do, is they ran a cold water bath and put the dog in cold water. This is absolutely terrible. The problem is one of the ways that dogs dissipate their heat, one thing is panting. The problem with panting is it's not very effective. They start to pant, and that diaphragm, their muscle, starts to really work, and that actually creates heat. So that doesn't exactly cool them down, particularly when they're really overheated. And then what happens is the way that they reduce their heat is they open up, they dilate the vessels in their limbs, and they try to dissipate heat through their skin like that. By putting them in a cold water bath, what those people did was cold water will do the opposite to the vessels. It will constrict them. And this dog couldn't dissipate more heat. In fact, it was making it worse sitting in this cold water bath. And that's a very big problem. And that's probably what eventually killed the dog, unfortunately. I saw it after that, and I did all sorts of treatments. I gave it cold water enemas, anything to cool it down, some ice packs that were in with the very large part of the vessel way up at the top of the legs so that there wasn't that constriction. We give them a medication that sedates them to try to stop them from panting. It also drops their temperature. But this dog just nothing would take. Every single treatment I used for heat stress did not work. And the dog literally died in front of my eyes a little later in the evening while I was talking on the phone with the owner. It was awful. Probably one of the worst cases I saw. So how do we avoid this? What you've got to think about is your breed. What kind of dog do you have? And if you have one of those dogs that many of us do, with the smushed up faces. You know, these dogs are so ugly, they're cute. Those are brachycephalic breeds with their faces. It looks like they ran into a wall. So anything that, where they've got this mouth that's this respiratory system that's smushed up like that, they're not going to be able to breathe very well. So they can't pant as well. They can't be as effective at dissipating heat. That puts them at risk. The other thing is Arctic breeds, big, heavy coated breeds. Then you've got to think about the time of day that you walk them. Don't walk them in the middle of the day. That's usually sort of the lunchtime. You know, sometimes the dog walker goes and picks up the dogs around this time of day. This is the absolute hottest time of day. Obviously, trying to keep some shade around them is a good idea. And remember, on hot days, they don't necessarily have to exercise. You know, we know it's a dog. We know it likes to run, but it doesn't mean we have to run it. So on those really hot days, if you've got an Arctic breed or brachycephalic breed, you may not want to do that. And, you know, always carry some water. And last but not least, do not put them in cold water to try to help them. It doesn't work out very well at all. Okay, thanks for listening to that. I hope everyone has a good summer of walking their dog and keeping away from heat stress. But let's go to the phones. Let's help people out. Give us a call, 416-872-1010. And we are taking your calls. Let's go to... Okay, here's a good question. Susie, you've got Buddy, 12-year-old. It says here Mini Jack. I don't know what that means.
He's a mix between a Jack Russell and a miniature pincer.
Okay, and what's going on with him?
Okay, he's been diabetic for 2 years and 4 months. And we're having trouble with the kibble. It's all special diet food from the vet. I can only get it from there. And I have to buy canned diabetic food as well to put on top, because he won't eat the kibble by itself because he doesn't like it. And he drinks lots of water because of the kibble. And he does like six poops a day at least, minimum. And the problem is I'm just thinking of going from all this diet food that I can only get at the vet to trying him to raw food. But... what would that do to his insulin levels and stuff? And what about the curve testing? What would I have to do?
Right. And so as far as the insulin's concerned, you know, look, really what we're talking about is the sugar levels inside and how much they spike. Obviously, simple sugars, carbohydrates, things like that, they're going to cause a higher spike and a little harder to control. In fact, a raw diet is not that bad a diet for a diabetic dog. How are you doing with his appetite? Like, is he having trouble eating things?
He has a pretty good appetite, but as I say, I supplement with the canned wet food on top of the dry kibble. And plus, just to get him enticed, I boil some chicken breast, and I put very little chicken breast throughout, just to give him that taste of the chicken, and he'll eat.
Okay. One of the first things I'll tell you is that when a diabetic dog has an appetite issue, sometimes it has to do with the amount of insulin that we're given. But what happens is, you know, our blood sugar goes up when we eat something. Then what happens is our body naturally produces this insulin that drives it back down again. The sugar actually goes into our cells. The cells can use it. And then our blood sugar starts to drop. That's what actually drives our appetite at that point. So if it's not dropping enough, sometimes dogs won't eat. And one of the things that owners do is when they don't eat, sometimes they don't give the insulin. Have you ever done that?
No, I've always given him his
good.
Insulin.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that. That's actually pretty rare that I hear that, because you have to give the insulin to drive that sugar back down again and keep that appetite going. And so what I'd say is on the last, what I'd want to see is I think the thing that most vets do is they get very nervous about giving too high a dose of insulin, because it's not like people. They can't check it. People don't check it at home every day. So they have to pick a dose and that's it. And they sometimes go a little light. So the next curve, just make sure that, you know, all the numbers are down in the range. Sometimes vets will feel comfortable when it goes above the range, but it's best to keep it down in the range. And then what you do is very slowly transfer over to the raw food if you want to go there. And it's not a bad diabetic diet at all. It usually is a little lower in carbohydrate, and it's more higher in, you know, fiber and protein. So it's a pretty decent diabetic diet. You transfer very, very, very slowly, and by the time you're about 50-50, like like I'd take a week or two as you start to introduce some of it and pull back some of the kibble. You okay. work with one of the registered veterinary technicians at your animal hospital and talk to them about the calories, how many okay. calories, see if you can find out how many calories generally are in the raw diet. A lot of them give some instruction about that. They will tell you exactly how many calories your dog needs, and so you can figure out the amount. And then by the time you get to, say, 50-50, you know, maybe you do a curve at the hospital yeah. and see how it's going. If you want to push it, if you know your dog's doing pretty well and you've gotten, you know, into sort of the rhythms and you can tell, maybe you wait till you're on 100% and then you do the curve. And that should be fine, too. And then if the curve looks good after you're on 100% raw food, then you're good to go.
Good to go. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, generally, I'm just thinking, I had another question before I forgot because I was listening to you.
That's okay. Sorry. It's hard to remember. I have a hard enough time on the radio myself. So it's good to know there's other people that are nervous out there.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think you're just fine. What I'll do is I'll move on, and I appreciate it. If you think of the question, you can text me or you can call in. I appreciate the call. For anybody yeah. else, give us a call, 416-872-1010, and we will help you out. Oh, sure. What's
going
on?
I apologize. Can I just add some vegetables in with that raw meat, like carrots or broccoli or some vegetables to that, or is that
yeah.
too much sugar?
No, I would use, you know, the green leafy stuff, you know, cauliflower, broccoli, carrots. That stuff is fine.
Yeah.
And just do the same thing. It's just a slow transition. And that's about it. Everything when it comes to diet for anybody out there, if you want to know the best diet for your dog, there is yeah. no best diet. You have to do a trial and you have to transfer them very slowly. I appreciate the call. I got to go to commercial break.
Okay.
You're listening to Animal House.
Get the answers you need now. Contact the show by calling 416-872-1010 or text 71010. You're listening to The Animal House with Dr. Clayton Greenway on News Talk 1010 Toronto.
Welcome back to Animal House. We're having a good time this morning, and thanks for coming along with us. If you've got a question for me, give us a call, 416-872-1010, and we will help you out. Let's go back to the phones. Oh, boy, this one, this is always kind of a problem. Mark, you've got a six-year-old Mastiff Bulldog with some issues going on with his paws. What's happening?
Hey, good morning, Doc. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
So, yeah, she develops this kind of swelling in between her toes on her front paws, and it happened a few years ago, and then a couple of years went by with nothing, and now this year it's back again.
Yeah, this is the sort of almost like bubbly appearance in the skin, the interdigital skin between the toes.
Yeah, yeah.
Is she bothering at it like crazy?
Yeah.
Okay. What have the vets done in the past diagnostically for this?
It hasn't been enough of an issue. Actually,
right.
My wife was saying she was going to take the dog to the vet today. It's funny enough.
Sure. So what did they do last time that made it better? Do you remember?
They used some ointment.
And that was it.
Okay. One of the things that I always hate about this stuff is there's usually never any diagnostics done. And that always surprises me because there's different things that can cause this. A lot of the time it's bacterial infection, and that's what they usually say it's allergies. That's the word that always comes up. But, you know, allergies, you can't diagnose it unless you've gotten rid of everything else. So
right.
One of the things that they can get in between their toes that can stay there forever is yeast. And this is really common. There's lots of people out there with dogs that are licking their paws like crazy that have yeast infections, and they have no idea. So what you've got to do is, what they do is something called a skin scraping, and they kind of scrape the top of the top of the skin. They put it on a glass slide. They look at it under a microscope, and they see, is there just bacteria there, or is there yeast as well? And so the yeast definitely, it requires a different type of medication. And in fact, it can be in different places. How's his ears? Are there any ear infections that you've had?
No.
Okay, so sometimes the yeast can transfer to the ears, and that can be a problem as well. But you've got to diagnose first. So the treatment, what you can do in general, is you can do like foot baths, with any sort of antibacterial soap, an iodine product, anything like that. But that doesn't usually do it. You've got to diagnose, you know, is it a bacteria? And then you're using antibiotics and even oral antibiotics since it's on multiple paws. I don't like the idea of ointments and creams that go on top of it because that just makes it kind of gunky and everything. It doesn't let the air get to it and that sort of thing. So really what you've got to have is a diagnosis first. So if you're going to the vet, make sure they do a skin scraping. It does not cost very much. And the reason why it doesn't happen enough is there's, I think it just takes vets that extra time to do it. And in fact, some will run to the back, do the skin scraping while you're there in the appointment. I would always keep the dog for a couple hours in the back of the hospital, and I do a couple skin scrapings because I want to make sure that I diagnose it properly.
Right.
So that's what I would do if you get a chance to go to the vet, get them to diagnose it. Try not to accept when they say it's allergies and they'll just give you a treatment because you don't know if it's going to work or not.
Okay, thank you. Thanks.
All right, no problem. All right, for anybody else, give us a call, 416-872-1010, and we will help you out. Let's go to, here's an interesting one. Maria, you've got Bella, 4-year-old Shih Tzu, and there are some abnormal blood changes on some blood work. What's going on?
That is what we don't know. I brought her in I adopted her. And she wasn't spayed yet. So I brought her in for her spaying, and the vet called me back that her liver is so high.
Okay.
I don't know where it comes from.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's see if we can get some more information here. So which liver values were elevated? This is so important. Do you know which ones were?
No idea.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, obviously there's two.
I know that she takes blood. She take the blood, and then she let me
know. So did they tell you, do you have any idea about numbers, about how high the number is? Did they tell you?
Oh, I think she said in the 300.
Okay. That's not so bad, depending on which one it is. there's two liver values that we really look at. One is called ALT, and one is called ALP. ALT is called alanine. Oh my goodness, I can't. It's very hard to remember these acronyms. I got to ask a second year vet student. ALT is what we call a leakage enzyme, and when the liver cells break, they'll leak this ALT, and it will go up in the bloodstream. The ALP can come from different sources, and it doesn't. So the first one, because it's a leakage enzyme, it speaks to damage of the liver cells. The ALP, not at all. I see the ALP elevated in a lot of dogs on general blood work, and it means nothing, and it's totally fine. So you've got to, what I would say is this. Well, where do you go from here? You can call your vet. Don't tell him that you spoke to the radio vet, okay?
No.
You tell him the radio vet, he's just not going to listen to you anymore.
No.
So you ask whether it's the ALT or the ALP. If it's the ALP, I wouldn't worry. Now, the one question I have for you is, does your dog drink an excessive amount of water?
No.
No? Okay,
not
because
the... No, more than she used to, but not that. No, not that.
Okay. ALP will also elevate in a disease called Cushing's disease, which gets them drinking and peeing more often. Now, 300 is not very high at all if it's ALP. And that wouldn't worry me at all. But what I would say is, look, you can have a discussion with your vet about the different enzymes and whether this is really a concern or not. Or what you can do is you can just recheck it. I'm sure that's probably the plan they gave you, right?
Every time I come in.
Yeah. The problem is it doesn't give you a lot of faith, right? Because there's nothing being done. Are they doing anything to change this liver value?
He thought that maybe it was an infection somewhere.
That's weird. I mean, that I would go with that if the infection-fighting cells are elevated, the white blood cells, the neutrophils, there's a temperature, or you see infection somewhere. I mean, a mildly elevated liver value is absolutely, I mean, we would have to say the infection is in the liver, right? I mean, if it's a liver infection, we got a serious problem, and you would see these other elevations. So what I'd tell you is, look, maybe recheck it, and let's do this. Let's say something really inappropriate. If there's another vet at the clinic, maybe have them take a look at it. The next appointment, go with a different vet at the same clinic. That's terrible to say, but let's get somebody else's kind of opinion on it, because I that's just weird to me, a liver infection from just one elevated liver enzyme. I'm trying to be as sort of judicial as possible here.
He gave the dog an injection.
Uh-huh.
There's only one. He said, how long will...
Okay.
Only one? Yeah, that lasts for 2 weeks.
Okay. So, now we're off the rails a little bit. If we're treating it, we don't know what we're treating it with. So I get, I'm a little nervous about weighing into it because I haven't seen your dog, and you know I've got to let the vet take care of it. But the thing is, it's a little odd. I mean, a little bit of an elevation in a liver value would not necessarily derail a surgery for me, even an elective one. It just depends on which enzyme it is. And if it is ALT, which is the bad one, I would put them on a liver support product and then recheck it. I mean, I'd be doing something about it. The shot, I don't know of a liver support drug that you're giving by a shot, so I don't know what road they're going down. But I would recommend that you have it rechecked and see what they say about it, see if it improves. If not, I would get a second opinion.
And plus can you repeat the number? HLB?
ALT is the bad one. Okay.
ALT.
And ALP is the one that's not as much of a concern.
Okay.
Okay, that can come from different sources than the liver. So I'll leave you with that, and I appreciate the call. Good luck, and let us know how it goes.
Yeah.
For anybody else, give us a call, 416, no problem. Give us a call, 416-872-1010, and we will help you out. See, I'm just making sure that I don't get into too much trouble, all right? Because if anyone shares my name then with a vet, they call the licensing body right away. Hey, he's meddling with my case and he's on the radio. It's awful. I'm just trying to help here. But that should be just fine. I do like fighting those people too, though. All right. Give us a call, 416-872-1010. And when we come back, more of your questions. You're listening to Animal House.
To interact with veterinarian and pet expert Dr. Clayton Greenway, send your text to 71010.
Welcome back to Animal House. I was on mute, just like a Zoom call. Thanks for listening. As I always say, listen to the radio and then take the dog for a walk. Oh boy, I've been doing this many, many years. You know, I used to be really bad at it. That reminds me, it's very easy to not be good at the radio once in a while. Leave the button on mute. I used to break into the newscast, you know, the news guy would start going, and I would accidentally press the wrong button and break right into his report, and it totally screw him up. God, I was awful when I started. You know, they didn't give me much instruction. They just said, I said, how do I do this radio show? What buttons do I push? And they said, what are you worried about? You're a veterinarian. You know the answers. Don't worry about it. Oh, man. Okay. I'm getting better. I'm getting better. Give us a call, 416-872-1010, and we will help you out. Oh, my goodness. Let's go to, let's go to Patricia. Let's get into trouble here, Patricia. You've got Dudley, a Shih Tzu Spaniel, and you're a little worried about how hot he's getting during the week.
Yeah,
what's going on?
He's very hairy. He's almost like a Lhasa apso. His feet are about three times too big, and they're very hairy.
Okay.
He gets very,
so he's
very
like a
hot.
Hobbit. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, different people tell me, shear him, and then other people say, you don't shear a puppy for the heat. I don't shear. You know, I mean, give him a good haircut.
Yeah, like a sheep.
Hair, but it's long, and it's that shiny black.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like a little oven when I get home, and I walk him at 5:30 in the morning.
All right. Well, look, are you ready to get into trouble with me?
Yeah.
Okay. I once told people that had golden retrievers that go up to the cottage, and these golden retrievers get skin infections from going in and out of the water. I said you can give them a cut, like a cut down, shave down. And I almost had to dismantle my Facebook page because of the breeders that went absolutely bananas when I gave out this advice.
Oh.
And it was really crazy because particularly with that breed, they have like an undercoat. Once you shave it, it never grows back properly again. All of them can screw off. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart, because the thing is they would send me these sort of pseudo medical papers about how you're not supposed to shave them. Okay. This is not written by a doctor or anything. It's just some other breeder idiot that they all like. And they basically said, you know, don't shave them. And then the very last line in this pseudo medical document would say, for medical purposes, you can shave them. And so I don't know what these people are doing for spays and neuters and stuff. And obviously they're not shaving their dogs, but you can shave your dog anytime you want, whatever breed it is. So if you think, I mean, with a puppy, you know, there's not a lot of mass to the body. Like there's not a lot of heat generation. I don't think you're going to get into trouble. I probably in this case wouldn't get into that process. Yeah. I'd probably say, you know, look, just if you're thinking that he's getting a little hot or, you know, he's a little exhausted. Remember, puppies are either bouncing off the walls or they're like dead tired.
I have another question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
He was neutered last week. How long before the testosterone dissipates and he calmed down a bit?
Well, what was he doing that you think was testosterone driven?
Just busy. I mean, hyperactive. He's very, he wants to please, but oh my gosh, he is just like a whirlwind, and I've had other puppies.
Yeah. So if it's just energy, I wouldn't really worry about it. He is right now, I think it said 5 months. So he's well within the time period. Like that testosterone should have very little effect. He might just be an energetic puppy. That's all I would say. And I would say, I wouldn't start shaving until, you know, you're really getting a consistent concern and problem. He's just energetic and probably his highs are really high and his lows are really low. So it's making you feel like he's overexhausted or overheated or something.
Yeah, like it's either a crash and burn. He's busy, then crashes.
Yeah. Well, that's his job. That's what he does. So I wouldn't worry about it. I think you're in good shape. And the breeders can they can call any time, and I'll have them on the show and tell them how stupid they are.
I get so many controversial statements from them. Don't do it. Don't do it. Do it. Do it.
Here's some good advice. If anybody says what you should do, that's the person you don't listen to. Okay. What you want to hear is someone explain why they would give that advice or what's going on with that issue, and then you as the owner decide.
Okay.
So they're just supposed to educate you or inform you of what's going on. We look at this puppy, we say, well, it's energetic, sometimes it's high, sometimes it's low, this is what we got to watch. You know, I'm giving you advice.
I walk him at 6 in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning, and then at night I don't take him out in the heat of the day.
Yeah, see, the testosterone for me makes sure that I never wake up at 5 or 6 a.m. So that's even the kids are up, at least the girls. But the guy, you know, my son and me, no, forget it. 6 a.m. calls aren't happening anymore. I appreciate the call. I'll move on. Thanks, and good luck with things. Give us a call, 416-872-1010, and we will help you out. Let's go to this. William, you've trapped a cat. What's happening here?
Good morning, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay, I trapped this cat last January.
Yeah.
I took him to the vet, cost me $2,000 to have him cleaned and everything.
Whoa.
Okay, the first question is, he loves to scratch, scratch, scratch. I keep his toenails short as possible. How can I stop him from scratching?
What is he scratching?
Scratching posts around the house.
Yeah.
So how can I stop him, or what can I do?
What is he scratching that you don't want him to scratch?
Anything. He scratches the rug, he scratches the chest of pillow, he scratches the pillow. He scratches anything.
Well, that could be tough. Here's what I would say to that is what you want to try to do, and this may or may not work because it sounds like it's pretty ingrained in him, but we'll see. What I would do is I would focus his attention very much on the things that are appropriate to scratch by sprinkling catnip on it, putting a toy around there.
All kinds of toys. toys, I spread catnip sure. on the scratching post.
What I would do is I'd get rid of the toys, but I would just put, I would just focus the stuff on the scratching post and really try to focus there. Also, what kind of scratching posts do you have?
I have the cloth ones.
Sorry?
The cloth like a carpet, you know.
Oh, okay. What I'd suggest is they've got these great cardboard ones that you can really sprinkle catnip down deep in it.
Yeah.
And that would be a new, that would be something that's new. He can kind of rip it apart over time.
Oh,
I would probably
right,
pick up something like that. Yeah, like get something newer, no cat smells on it from anyone before. Put catnip on that and really focus his attention there. Do a hardcore push there. It also says here that you want to get him to get along with your other cat.
Okay, they both will get along. They can sleep 2 feet apart. But the thing is, I had another female I trapped about 4 years ago. She had the whole house to herself, was boss. Now, when she jumps down from her perch or wherever she gets in, the new cat wants to follow her, and
yeah.
she has, my God, a hissy fit like she thinks she was being murdered.
Okay.
And the other thing is, when I squirt water on the new cat, he takes off, but the thing is, she will go looking for him. And then I saw her, he was sleeping in the bed, she will go and whack him on the head, or whack his tail, and run behind the chair and want to see what he's doing.
Sure.
So
yeah,
she's teasing him, or I don't know, trying to get him in trouble.
Yeah. A lot of that used to happen to me in grade school. So the thing is I would say that this is pretty normal cat behavior. There's territorial. Now, cats are territorial.
Yeah,
here's the simple thing that I would have you do. If you want this to be reduced, something that typically really helps with this is these plug-in devices. I don't know if you've heard of them, but what they are... Yes, and you plug it in, it's like a Glade plug-in type of thing, and it heats up a cat, it's not from Glade, but it heats up a cat hormone or pheromone in there, and it really has a calming effect. That can help a lot, but yeah, I have two female cats, and it's like they get into the zone where it's, okay, you chase me, okay, now you chase me, that sort of thing. That's part of what they do.
One's a male, one's a female.
Yeah, for sure. So the female probably doesn't like that this ogre was brought into the house. And start, but it's a playmate.
She's on my lap, she will come, and will come under my leg and put a paw up, whap, give him a whap. And she will, when she's down, she's up in my lap.
Yeah. Well, it's like he's married now, so I've had that too. So
okay.
The thing is that's no problem. So think about this plug-in device.
Yeah.
Ask your vet about it.
Any pet store would have them?
Yeah, pet supply stores will have them. You can get them online.
No.
I just can't tell you the name of it because
sir,
I'm not supposed to do that. Okay.
Advertise.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it. Okay, for anybody else, give us a call. 416-872-1010. Sometimes I feel like a traffic cop on the show, but it's always fun to hear these stories about our pets and what we will tolerate from them. When we come back, more of your questions. You're listening to Animal House.
Johnny is a joker. He's a bird.
Get the answers you need now. Contact the show by calling 416-872-1010 or text 71010. You're listening to The Animal House with Dr. Clayton Greenway on News Talk 1010 Toronto.
Welcome back to Animal House. If you've got a question for us, give us a call. 416-872-1010, and we will help you out. Let's go to... okay, Dahlia, you've got a four-year-old Schnauzer name. So what's a Schnauzer?
A Schnauzer.
Oh, Schnauzer. Okay,
Schnauzer.
No
yes,
problem.
Yes. Thank you very much for taking my call. Yeah, so she's a very easy-going dog, except for when she goes to the groomer or the vet. And the last time that we were at the vet, she was so stressed because they were doing the cystocinthesis as a follow-up because she'd had a UTI. So
yep.
The results came back totally, totally clear. But they had to restrain her, and she came up slightly lame after the visit. And the vet felt so badly. She was totally off for almost 10 days, and the vet kept calling me every day to see how she was. Anyway,
wow.
She's fine now. But the vet recommended that I give her something that starts with a T and ends in phone, like own.
You can say what it is.
Okay, trazodone.
Okay, yeah. So basically, yep, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so I read all the side effects of trazodone, and it scared me, and I thought, do I really want to do this to my dog? So somebody else recommended, you know, go see a holistic vet, and you can get something else, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So one of the things is here's what I'd say is I love telling people go the natural route. A lot of doctors won't go straight there. But when we're talking about sedation, people get, they get a little uncomfortable with the idea of sedating their dog, chemically altering them a little bit. What I will say is the stress that they experience at the vet, you have to remember they are so sensitive. Their smell, their hearing, they go into that world. And, I mean, they can smell the perfume on each person in that room and the different smells of that, let alone all the rest of it, all the animals that have been there, the pee that was cleaned up in the corner an hour ago, all sorts of stuff. It's an assault on their senses. And some of them do not do well with that. And quite frankly, it can be quite dangerous. So I'm definitely on board with the idea of, you know, I'd tell you that your comfort level, I want you to try to ease some of that back for the sake of doing a bit of sedation. I'm not trying to make the job easier for the vets. I really am just concerned about the stress that your pet goes through. It's not good. And there have been episodes where pets can succumb to that stress and it can be fatal. And there's no question that we hear these stories from time to time. So I want you to be not afraid of that. But if you want to start with natural products first, ask your vet about it. You can try to track down a holistic vet. There's not many of them, but you can look them up online. And you can ask about that. Sometimes it's a combination of stuff. And let's just face it, sometimes the natural stuff, it just doesn't have the power of the drugs, right? And of course, when you look at the side effect of a drug, you'll go crazy over how terrible it is. I mean, anything is dangerous. I mean, if you drink too much water, you can die. But the thing is side effects like these, you'll see a whole list of them. I mean, just think about the aspirin that you take. Look at the side effects of aspirin. It's fairly safe. It's given out. It's over the counter. But it has a laundry list of side effects that will scare you to death. And so that's the case with any drug. The idea is you'd want to start a little slow. Give a very small dosage of it. The dosage can range, and what you're talking about there is like a painkiller sedative type of drug, and it's given to a lot of animals in fear-free clinics. And when I say that, some dogs and cats that come to a clinic and they're too stressed out, they'll be sent home right away with some of that medication to come back the next time. And that's before blood work or physical exam or anything like that. So I will say that those type of drugs as well, they're quite, believe it or not, they're quite safe, like opioids and stuff, morphine products. I mean, that's why they get, you know, they'd have it for medics in the battlefield. They actually don't cause that much of a side effect like heavy sedatives do and stuff like that. They tend to be fairly safe as long as the dosage is within the right realm. So I wouldn't be afraid of that. I'd talk to your vet a little more about the natural product and then potentially the trazodone if it's not working.
Okay. And may I ask you another question about
the rabies shots?
She has her rabies shots up and coming in a couple of weeks. And she's only 12 pounds. And I understand that they give the same dosage whether your dog is 100 pounds or 12 pounds. So
that's right.
One of my friends who has her sister litter said she gives her dog titers. I don't know much about that. So I just wondered what your views are on that.
This is a great question. I love talking about vaccines because I love talking about the necessity or not necessity of it. And I tend to talk about it in a way that most vets don't. A lot of vets, one of the things I really hate is if you go to a clinic, they typically have their vaccine program and they dole it out to every single animal that walks through the doors. I don't believe in that, and I never did. What I did was I would talk to the owner, and I would say, here are the different vaccines. What does your dog do? Where does it live? Does it live, you know, in an apartment? Do you walk in a ravine? Are you in a home? Are you downtown or in the suburbs? Do you go somewhere every summer? You know, you want to tailor this stuff to the dog. Rabies vaccine is something that really bothers people a lot because it's required by law, and, you know, we don't see animals with rabies, right? It doesn't happen that much. However, there are animals this year that have been other urban wildlife that have been positive for rabies. I think there might have been a recorded case of a dog that came from somewhere. But the problem is this. It's keeping these diseases under control. And here's the thing about the rabies vaccine. You can't get away from it because it's required by law. Now, what if you don't give it? You have that choice. You're not supposed to have the choice. But let's say you're working with your vet and your vet says, okay, we're not going to do it. What will that mean? Well, if you run into trouble and you have to run into an emergency clinic, they can like refuse to work with your pet because it's not rabies vaccinated. So if it bites one of the staff or whatnot, that's a problem. If it bites one of the staff and it's not rabies vaccinated, it's going to be quarantined. You're going to get a call from the city, all of this sort of stuff. The rabies, definitely what you want to do is you want to give it every 3 years. You want to give it as minimum as possible to cover yourself legally. What really drives me nuts is the vets that give it every year. And if there are any vets listening to me right now, you call me next time and you tell me why you're giving it every year. Because here's the thing. And I've had a drug company call me after this, after saying this, but I don't care. This is true. The vaccine that's in the 3-year bottle and the vaccine that's in the 1-year bottle, you know what the difference is? It's the label. That's it. Okay. And that vaccine lasts longer. Now, the drug company, one of the salespeople at the drug company called and said, you can't say that. That's not true. I said, well, show me what's in it. They absolutely would not. They sent me a report on how the responses were and the antibodies that were produced and how it might have differed a little bit. I said, that doesn't make a difference. Of course, there's going to be a difference across subjects with the different vaccines and different reports done at different times. But they would not show me what's in the bottle because it's exactly the same. So always do the 3-year. Here's the thing about the rabies titer that you're talking about. A titer test tests the, level of antibodies that you have to that disease that have been produced by that vaccine. So if they are over a certain level, they say, okay, your dog is protected. So you don't need another vaccine. You can do this with all the vaccines. The problem is with rabies, they do have that test. The only time it's used is for when you're traveling. Some countries require that you have to have that titer test. But the problem is there's still the law. The law still states that you have to give this vaccine. A rabies titer test actually doesn't get you out of that, unfortunately. But any titer test on any vaccine, any disease for any vaccine that we have, you can run and you can decide whether you want to booster it or not. The rabies one is the only one required by law and you're supposed to give it. So that's what I would say. The only other thing is the rabies titer test is real expensive. It's somewhere up in the neighborhood of $400. So a lot of people choose not to do that. All right, that's my time. For anyone that I didn't get to, give me a call next week. And for those vets giving out those 1-year vaccines, come on the show. I'd love to talk to you. Be good to your pets.
Mass hysteria.
Mass hysteria.